Chapter 11. I kept my word to Jacobus. I haunted his home. He was perpetually finding me there of an afternoon, when he popped in for a moment from the door. The sound of my voice talking to his Alice greeted him on his doorstep, and when he returned for good in the evening, 10 to 1 he would hear it still going on in the veranda. I just nodded to him. He would sit down heavily and gently, and watch with a sort of approving anxiety my efforts to make his daughter smile. I called her often Lice, right before him. Sometimes I would address her as Miss Aunt Care, and I exhausted myself in nonsensical chatter without succeeding once in taking her out of her peevish and tragic self. There were moments when I felt I must break out and start swearing at her till all was blue. And I fancied that had I done so, Jacobus would not have moved a muscle. A sort of shady, intimate understanding seemed to have been established between us. I must say the girl treated her father exactly in the same way she treated me. And how could it have been otherwise? She treated me as she treated her father. As he had never seen a visitor. She did not know how men behaved. I belonged to the low lot with whom her father did business at the port. I was of no account. So was her father. The only decent people in the world were the people of the island, who would have nothing to do with him, because of something wicked he had done. This was apparently the explanation Miss Jacobus had given her of the household's isolated position. For as he had to be told something. And I feel convinced that this version had been assented to by Jacobus. I must say the old woman was putting it forward with considerable gusto. It was on her lips the universal explanation, the universal allusion, the universal taunt. One day Jacobus came in early, and, beckoning me into the dining room, wiped his brow with a weary gesture, and told me that he had managed to unearth a supply of quarterbacks. It's 1,400 your ship wanted, did you say, Captain? Yes, yes, I replied eagerly, but he remained calm. He looked more tired than I had ever seen him before. Well, Captain, you may go and tell your people that they can get that lot from my brother. As I remained open-mouthed at this, he added his usual placid formula of assurance. You'll find it correct, Captain. You spoke to your brother about it? I was distinctly awed. And he for me? Because he must have known that my ship's the only one hung up for backs. How on earth? He wiped his brow again. I noticed that he was dressed with unusual care, in clothes in which I had never seen him before. He avoided my eye. You've heard people talk, of course. ... That's true enough. He ... We certainly. ... For several years ... His voice declined to a mere sleepy murmur. Usie, I had something to tell him of, something which his murmur stopped. He was not going to tell me what this something was. And I didn't care. Anxious to carry the news to my charterers, I ran back on the veranda to get my hat. At the bustle I made, the girl turned her eyes slowly in my direction, and even the old woman was checked in her knitting. I stopped a moment to exclaim excitedly. Your father's a brick, Miss Don't Care. That's what he is. She beheld my elation in scornful surprise. Jacobus, with unwonted familiarity, seized my arm as I flew through the dining room, and breathed heavily at me a proposal about plate of soup that evening. I answered distractedly. H? What? Oh, thanks. Certainly. With pleasure, and tore myself away. Dine with him? Of course. The merest gratitude, but some 3 hours afterwards, in the dusky, silent street, paved with cobblestones, I became aware that it was not mere gratitude which was guiding my steps towards the house with the old garden, where for years no guest other than myself had ever dined. Mere gratitude does not gnaw at one's interior economy in that particular way. Hunger might, but I was not feeling particularly hungry for Jacobus's food. On that occasion too, the girl refused to come to the table. My exasperation grew. The old woman cast malicious glances at me. I said suddenly to Jacobus, "Here, Put some chicken and salad on that plate. He obeyed without raising his eyes. I carried it with a knife and fork and a serviette out on the veranda. The garden was one mass of gloom, like a cemetery of flowers buried in the darkness, and she, in the chair, seemed to muse mournfully over the extinction of light and color. Only whiffs of heavy scent passed like wandering, fragrant souls of that departed multitude of blossoms. I talked volubly, jocularly, persuasively, tenderly. I talked in a subdued tone. To a listener it would have sounded like the murmur of a pleading lover. Whenever I paused expectantly there was only a deep silence. It was like offering food to a seated statue. I haven't been able to swallow a single morsel thinking of you out here starving yourself in the dark. It's positively cruel to be so obstinate. Think of my sufferings. Don't care. I felt as if I could have done her some violence, shaken her, beaten her maybe. I said, your absurd behavior will prevent me coming here anymore. What's that to me? You like it. It's false, she snarled. My hand fell on her shoulder, and if she had flinched I verily believe I would have shaken her. But there was no movement and this immobility disarmed my anger. You do. Or you wouldn't be found on the veranda every day. Why are you here, then? There are plenty of rooms in the house. You have your own room to stay in, if you did not want to see me. But you do. You know you do. I felt a slight shudder under my hand, and released my grip, as if frightened by that sign of animation in her body. The scented air of the garden came to us in a warm wave like a voluptuous and perfumed sigh. Go back to them, she whispered, almost pitifully. As I re-entered the dining room I saw Jacobus cast down his eyes. I banged the plate on the table. At this demonstration of ill humor he murmured something in an apologetic tone, and I turned on him viciously, as if he were accountable to me for these abominable eccentricities, I believe I called them. But I dare say Miss Jacobus here is responsible for most of this offensive manner, I added loftily. She piped out at once in her brazen, ruffianly manner. Eh? Why don't you leave us in peace, my good fellow? I was astonished that she should dare before Jacobus. Yet what could he have done to repress her? He needed her too much. He raised a heavy, drowsy glance for an instant, then looked down again. She insisted with shrill finality. Haven't you done your business, you two? Well, then, as he had the true Jacobus impudence, that old woman. Her mop of iron gray hair was parted on the side like a man's, raffishly, and she made, as if to plunge her fork into it, as she used to do with the knitting needle, but refrained. Her little black eyes sparkled venomously. I turned to my host at the head of the table menacingly as it were. Well, and what do you say to that, Jacobus? Am I to take it that we have done with each other? I had to wait a little. The answer when it came was rather unexpected, and in quite another spirit than the question. I certainly think we might do some business yet with those potatoes of mine, Captain. You will find that I cut them short. I've told you before that I don't trade. His broad chest heaved without a sound in a noiseless sigh. Think it over, Captain, he murmured, tenacious and tranquil, and I burst into a jarring laugh, remembering how he had stuck to the circus rider woman the depth of passion under that placid surface, which even cuts with a riding whip, so the legend had it, could never raffle into the semblance of a storm. Something like the passion of a fish, would be if one could imagine such a thing as a passionate fish. That evening I experienced more distinctly than ever the sense of moral discomfort which always attended me in that house lying under the ban of all decent people. I refused to stay on and smoke after dinner, and when I put my hand into the thickly cushioned palm of Jacobus, I said to myself that it would be for the last time under his roof. I pressed his bulky paw heartily nevertheless. Hadn't he got me out of a serious difficulty? To the few words of acknowledgement I was bound, and indeed quite willing, to utter, he answered by stretching his closed lips in his melancholy, glued together smile. That will be all right, I hope, Captain, he breathed out weightily. What do you mean? I asked, alarmed. Had your brother might yet, oh, no, he reassured me. He's a man of his word, Captain. My self-communion as I walked away from his door, trying to believe that this was for the last time, was not satisfactory. I was aware myself that I was not sincere in my reflections as to Jacobus's motives, and, of course, the very next day I went back again. How weak, irrational, and absurd we are. How easily carried away whenever our awakened imagination brings us the irritating hint of a desire. I cared for the girl in a particular way, seduced by the moody expression of her face, by her obstinate silences, her rare, scornful words, by the perpetual pout of her closed lips, the black depths of her fixed gaze turned slowly upon me, as if in contemptuous provocation, only to be averted next moment with an exasperating indifference. Of course the news of my assiduity had spread all over the little town. I noticed a change in the manner of my acquaintances, and even something different in the nods of the other captains, when meeting them at the landing steps or in the offices where business called me. The old maidish head clerk treated me with distant punctiliousness, and, as it were, gathered his skirts round him for fear of contamination. It seemed to me that the very niggers on the quays turned to look after me as I passed. And as to Jacobus's boatman Isoud Knight, saw, when he put me on board, was no longer merely cordial, it had a familiar, confidential sound as though we had been partners in some villainy. My friend S. the Elder passed me on the other side of the street with a wave of the hand and an ironic smile. The younger brother, the one they had married to an elderly shrew, he, on the strength of an older friendship, and as if paying a debt of gratitude, took the liberty to utter a word of warning. You're doing yourself no good by your choice of friends, my dear chap, he said with infantile gravity. As I knew that the meeting of the brothers Jacobus was the subject of excited comment in the whole of the sugary pearl of the ocean, I wanted to know why I was blamed. I have been the occasion of a move which may end in a reconciliation surely desirable from the point of view of the proprieties, don't you know? Of course, if that girl were disposed of, it would certainly facilitate, he mused sagely. Then, inconsequential creature, gave me a light tap on the lower part of my waistcoat. Ooh, old sinner, he cried jovially, much you care for proprieties. But you had better look out for yourself. You know, with a personage like Jacobus who has no sort of reputation to lose. He had recovered his gravity of a respectable citizen by that time and added regretfully, all the women of our family are perfectly scandalized. But by that time I had given up visiting the S family and the D family. The elder ladies pulled such faces when I showed myself, and the multitude of related young ladies received me with such a variety of looks. Wondering, awed, mocking, except Miss Mary, who spoke to me, and looked at me with hushed, pained compassion as though I had been ill, that I had no difficulty in giving them all up. I would have given up the society of the whole town, for the sake of sitting near that girl, snarling and superb and barely clad in that flimsy, dingy, amber wrapper, open low at the throat. She looked, with the wild wisps of hair hanging down her tense face, as though as he had just jumped out of bed in the panic of a fire. She sat leaning on her elbow, looking at nothing. Why did she stay listening to my absurd chatter? And not only that, but why did she powder her face in preparation for my arrival? It seemed to be her idea of making a toilet, and in her untidy negligence a sign of great effort towards personal adornment. But I might have been mistaken. The powdering might have been her daily practice, and her presence in the veranda a sign of an indifference so complete as to take no account of my existence. Well, it was all one to me. I loved to watch her slow changes of pose, to look at her long immobilities composed in the graceful lines of her body, to observe the mysterious narrow stare of her splendid black eyes, somewhat long in shape, half closed, contemplating the void. She was like a spellbound creature with the forehead of a goddess crowned by the disheveled magnificent hair of a gypsy tramp. Even her indifference was seductive. I felt myself growing attached to her by the bond of an irrealizable desire, for I kept my head quiet. And I put up with the moral discomfort of Jacobus's sleepy watchfulness, tranquil, and yet so expressive, as if there had been a tacit pact between us two. I put up with the insolence of the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.